Pervoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, hour two. And guess who's gotten Russian citizenship, if you haven't already heard? Mr. Snowden now has Russian citizenship. I wouldn't mind having it. I do recall, I think they offer a program for foreigners if you... And they give you free land, but it's out in the Far East in like Siberia. So basically, if you move out to Siberia and work, make productive a plot of land, I think after 5 years, you'll get Russian citizenship. So for some of those people listening to my program, like last week, we talked with My Latin Life, all about Latin America and multiple passports and residencies. It's only 5 years of living in Siberia to get your Russian citizenship. Or maybe you can marry a Russian. So there you go. That's interesting. And it's been reported that if opposition leader Netanyahu becomes prime minister, I guess again, and his policies are enacted, Israel will no longer be a liberal democracy and will instead become an authoritarian democracy, according to Justice Minister Gideon, whose last name I can't pronounce, Sar. So that sort of rhetoric is interesting for me. I don't follow. You can't follow every country's ongoings so closely. So I don't follow Israel's that closely. And he says this is a slipping of the state of Israel in a direction that certainly is less democratic, according to how we understand what a liberal democracy that has checks and balances is. And as I mentioned on the previous hour, apparently the U.S. government has finally admitted in a DOJ letter that that they were running confidential human sources inside Stuart Rhodes's Oath Keepers organization. So basically you have feds everywhere. We saw last week it was reported that the German government these online radical Nazis were actually German government intelligence officers pretending to be Nazis to, I mean, there were so many of them doing that they had to start sharing information to figure out which who was who. So memes just keep coming to life. And we also have California wanting to ban natural gas heaters by 2030. Just total madness. Gas powered water heaters and furnaces from 2030. There's a lot of natural gas. Well, you know what? I guess more for us here in Mexico. So whatever, you know. So, you know, we still use a bunch of gas for heating our water and cooking here in Mexico. So, okay, whatever, California. And that's why so many Californians are leaving to Texas and Mexico. So, okay. And if it wasn't already bad enough news regarding, you know, Nord Stream, all the energy issues between Russia and Europe, and Russia saying whatever, and, you know, rerouting their pipelines to the east and just, you know, replacing their demand from the west, by the east, apparently pressure has plunged mysteriously in Nord Stream 1 and 2. It's reported that Nord Stream 2 has experienced a sudden loss in pressure, and so a leak was detected in Danish waters. So there's a lot of black swans swimming in our lake, and, you know, it will just take that one at that right moment to really make, you know, put us into, cross the Rubicon, just put us into a catastrophic global position. And Russia's FSB has detained the Japanese diplomat suspected of spying. So as tensions ratchet up, we'll see more and more of this sort of thing. And $1 million Yale University research project was given to combat racist video game hair. Imagine how that money could have been spent much better otherwise, such as, you know, providing clean water and things in developing countries. Anyways, just to remind you again, easy way to help TNT Radio is just follow us on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, Getter, YouTube, everywhere, and subscribe there, share, and that sort of thing. And that way you can help us get the word out here on TNT Radio.
Your news, local and abroad.
It's the news from home and from overseas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, I'm joined again by Daniel Burke, former candidate for U.S. Senate, New Jersey. He's a Schiller Institute representative. You can find his work and the rest of the work of LaRouche at schillerinstitute.com and subscribe to Daniel on Twitter at Burke, the number four, and Senate. I did want to start on a light, note. You posted. I was laughing, and maybe you can explain. This is funny. You said that you said, quote, "I have it from an extremely reliable source that Xi Jinping personally arrested Hillary Clinton, Steve Bannon, and George Soros this evening. I'll update you as the situation develops." And I'm still waiting for the update. So what's going on?
Well, please wait patiently, because I'll make sure to keep you updated about this developing situation with my contacts, of course, my sources who are giving me, you know, all of the inside scoop. Now, unfortunately, the situation is that basically we got a clone situation. They've been replaced by clones, and that's why you haven't seen it on the news. So the day that I tweeted that was the day that we had all of the hubbub about a potential coup happening in China against President Xi, which I haven't looked too in depth into it, but it looks very much like this is something that comes out of the Falun Gong, out of the Epoch Times associates who started to spread all of these crazy, ridiculous rumors. And people are picking it up because, of course, the people who read the Epoch Times are the people who listen to Steve Bannon. You know, I went to a lot of things that had to do with Trump's movement or Trump's constituency, I'd say, during his presidency. I went to like four or five different Trump rallies. And every time we went there, we would see a dozen Falun Gong cult members lined up with the Epoch Times going up and down the line. The lines, incredible lines, you know, thousands and thousands of people, a line a mile long. And they would go up and down telling people about how they were going to fight the Chinese Communist Party and that you needed to read the Epoch Times. And this is the same sort of vector where you get the QAnon phenomenon. And so they managed to fool a lot of people into getting worried about a coup in China when there was absolutely nothing to be concerned about. So that was me making fun of them.
Yeah, you know, I did see those rumors, and, you know, even some, you know, people that I follow, some smart, intelligent people tweeting about that. And I was going to retweet and amplify that Xi Jinping rumor, but that I just sort of stopped and I didn't do it because I couldn't find any real, you know, source. And then you just realize the information warfare that's going on. This is precisely that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's black propaganda. It's pre-war propaganda. Because the point is not really the thing itself. The point is that you get a population ready to believe anything about China. And that's what they would like. They would like people to be primed. People who have been abused. They've been totally abused by the media. Of course, that's why it's important that you and people like you do shows like this one. But they've been abused by the media. They've been abused by the political class in the United States, in the West generally. And therefore, people are in a really bad emotional state in many cases, not across the board, but in many cases. And that's the set of people who will wait and wait for the next Q drop. And that's what this was about. Now, if you can spread that phenomenon and get people into a kind of a mode of questioning everything, right? Questioning whether, in fact, something incredibly important might have happened that is being hushed up from the people, is only going to spread through Twitter in this way, but it's of a nature of something that you can't do anything about. That's the fundamental idea here, is you are a pawn adrift in a sea, and you have no control over the situation. And therefore, the only thing you can do is get excited and get worried and get, you know, and be on tenterhooks waiting for the next episode to drop about the geopolitical developments of the day. When what we really need is a population who will come out and say, we're not going to accept World War III. We're not going to accept nuclear war, as much as Jake Sullivan and Joe Biden and all of NATO are pushing us in that direction. We're not going to accept the mass destruction of the economy, according to Malthusian policies, of restricting food, restricting energy. And we have to have people who say, we need a new system. We need to change everything. So this is fundamentally a way of trying to prevent that natural response from coming forward. That's my view.
Yeah. And just to jump from China to Iran, I don't know how closely you've been following it. I've only been looking at it surface level, but again, we can draw on the depths of, you know, our historical knowledge, and it's clear, you know, of how things operate, color revolutions and whatnot, and just seeing National Endowment for Democracy and all this stuff, and the timing as well. If we just go back a year, there was Kazakhstan, and then Pakistan, and then Iran, and then China. And then I can't even keep track of how many countries, but just what sort of your gut reaction or feeling on with what's going on in Iran?
Well, of course, the context is the fact that Iran has made, you know, has joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a member. And they had this absolutely tremendous meeting in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, over the course of the 16th and the 17th of September. Where you had, I think if you included the observer countries, then you had over half of the world's population represented at that meeting. And if you just look at the members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, you're talking about 80% of the Eurasian landmass. So people got together and they put together proposals for how to actually mobilize the economic cooperation, which is the whole purpose of that organization. To do things like solve the intractable, supposedly, problem of Afghanistan. They got together and said, we are going to have a mutual commitment to the economic development of Afghanistan because that is in the interest of Afghans. It's the interest of all of our nations in Central Asia and across Eurasia. And that kind of commitment is what Iran is moving toward this model of state-to-state relations that we see in the Russia-China relationship, this kind of incredible, unshakable bond that's based on mutual benefit and the indivisible security rights of every nation. It's based on a devotion to the principles of international law as expressed in the UN Charter and its absolute best expressions. And that's what these countries are saying we're going to do. We're going to respect sovereignty. We're going to have mutual benefit. And the way we're going to get mutual benefit, the way we're going to get peace and stability is through real physical economic development. And I think it's that situation that has made, you know, it urgent for these waning Western powers, for the U.S., for the NED and so forth, the powers of the institutions of these of the United States and of the European powers to try to do what they can to disrupt it. But it's a losing game. It's a totally losing game. You know, have you seen this report that we put out in, I guess it was in February. No, maybe it was in April. It was in April on the internet, a new international economic architecture. Can I tell you a little bit about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, listen to these as parameters. This is the main thing I want to pull out of it for you. Just Russia, India, and China, just those three, which of course are leading members of Shanghai Cooperation Organization, they represent 38% of the world's population, 42% of the world's wheat production, 45% of the world's artificial fertilizer. They represent 16% of the world's oil production, 23% of its gas, 23% of its nuclear generation, 45% of its new nuclear capacity, 65% of the coal production in the world is those three countries, 26% of the iron ore, 66% of its steel. Of course, that's almost entirely China. A lot of these are heavily weighted towards China, especially coal and steel. 55% of the world's electrified rail. So you're talking about an absolute physical economic powerhouse in Eurasia because of the commitment to policies of integration, of mega projects, of infrastructure for transportation, so-called connectivity, for water transfer, for power systems, and everything else that's related to that. New cities, a total devotion to that level of progress, that kind of progress, physical progress. And I think that that's the fact that everything is, has become more and more apparently weighted in that direction has these guys desperate in the transatlantic sector to try to cause some kind of a disruption. But I don't think it'll work.
Yeah, I mean, you guys do great analysis. There's a lot there. We're going to have to jump to our first break. Again, the website is SchillerInstitute.com, and you can follow Daniel on Twitter at Burke, B-U-R-K-E, the number 4, and Senate. We'll be right back on TNT.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
I will tell you now exactly what I found out in my looking at this. That this is a size Z breast prosthetic. It is comical. It is ludicrous. It has no place in a school. It is absolutely, in my humble opinion, fetish gear. But because it's going into the school under the guise of a trans person, so he claims to be, no one ever is able to kind of diagnose this. They just make the claim. I suspect that he's a cross-dresser with a fetish, but what do I know? And so he's going into the shop class where he teaches, I think grade 9, with this. I mean, it's enormous. You can't even believe how big it is. It's pornographic. Here's how pornographic it is. The company that sells it, it's a company called Dokia, D-O-K-I-A. In their video sales pitch for it that runs on YouTube, they actually have a warning. Right? Like you can't watch this video. It may be upsetting to some people or one of those things, right? It's a censorship warning before you click on this. So it's fine for the people selling it to say that. God bless them for doing it. Yet the kids at Oakville Trafalgar have to confront this every day they're in that person's class. It is ridiculous.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
Democracy is under attack. The Australian government wants to control free speech and the internet with the Australian Code of Practice on Disinformation and Misinformation. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
I'm joined by Daniel Burke of the Schiller Institute. That's schillerinstitute.com. And we were talking about in the first segment about information, disinformation. Did you know, Daniel, that the CIA just launched, I think last week, their very own first podcast called The Langley Files? I take it you will become an avid listener.
I saw that. I'll probably be looking for the clips, you know.
But just going back to what you were saying earlier, I did have on a very well-informed guest recently, and he just commented on the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meet that you were talking about in Samarkand, and he said it probably was the most important SCO meet ever. We saw Xi, we saw Putin, I actually saw a clip of Putin and Erdogan walking hand in hand, like their arms intertwined, which was kind of interesting. And then there's a photo, I think maybe a lot of people know what I'm talking about, where you've got Lukashenko and Putin and many others sitting around a table with all this food and drinks and just talking, and they looked very optimistic. You know, and any other thought on this SCO meeting?
Well, I think that I think that anyone just take some time and look at it. Look at some of the statements that people made. And that's what I would encourage anyone who's listening to do. Try to learn about it. Executive Intelligence Review, the LaRouche publication, we covered it very, very carefully. And, you know, consider that that's the next 50 years of humanity. That's where the things have been shaped. Nothing is coming out of the West in terms of leadership right now. It's just pathetic. It's disgusting. It's extremely dangerous. And we each of us have to consider what our personal role might be in this historical process and how we can shift things towards sanity. Because what you see coming out of that meeting, which is the 20th anniversary of the creation of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and in that time period, I believe I read that the GDP of the original members has increased 12 times over. You know, they've had just tremendous development, incredible progress. Of course, China leading the way, but India being an important part of that, and other nations as well, including Russia. So that's where the future is being made. And then consider what happened. You know, Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, he gave a speech in New York, which I can't believe I missed at least going to see the people who are walking in there and talking to the people who are going to this thing. But he gave a speech in New York in which he reiterated the position of the Chinese government that the Belt and Road Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, and the Global Security Initiative, these are the three major initiatives of the Chinese government under Xi Jinping, that these policies are open to all parties, including the United States, to bring about win-win outcomes. So if you want to get past all of the anti-China nonsense that is being promoted by everyone from, you know, Tucker Carlson, who I'm sure you would agree is oftentimes has something intelligent to say, he's completely crazy on China, and many other people who have gone down this road, especially people who get money from Peter Thiel or people who are associated with Steve Bannon, or with British intelligence and the CIA and FBI. In fact, the Chinese government is extremely explicit. We want to work with the United States on economic development. And I think that that's what, if you look at the SCO meeting, you'll kind of get a sense of how that is genuine, and you won't be fooled by the lies that are being told.
Yeah, it's interesting. I caught this piece, I think it was published yesterday, today, Ling Ling Wei, the Wall Street Journal. China reins in its Belt and Road program, $1 trillion later. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't been following Belt and Road lately. It's just sort of, I feel like it's just there. I don't know what's going on. Maybe other events have taken over, even China's efforts related to it, because, you know, maybe they're dealing with other issues like the Congress that's coming next month, and Taiwan issues in Ukraine, and the COVID measures that have locked down parts of the economy. Just, you know, what are your thoughts on where the Belt and Road is at the moment? And you think it's just going to continue Belt and Roading as it is, or they're going to maybe wind things down a bit, or increase funds to it, or what do you think?
I think there's no possibility of winding things down. I can't comment on the specific issue that you referred to and like exactly what's going on with the funding. But I know that it's very difficult to get anything honest out of Western press, especially the establishment press, about the Belt and Road Initiative. And the person I would really recommend people study is Hussein Askari, the Southwest Asia coordinator for the Schiller Institute, and also the vice president of the BRICS Institute, which is the Belt and Road Institute of Sweden. And he has written some articles that have been published internationally recently, demonstrating that a key element of the Belt and Road Initiative, which is the China-EU Railway Express, is, you know, basically the high-speed rail that goes between China and Europe, has actually significantly increased this year in terms of its transport. And it's the only game in town, because that's that kind of economic development is actually leading to new hubs, new logistics hubs in Europe, in, for example, in Finland, and in a number of other different countries, because of the fact that that corridor of economic development, of transport and connectivity, is fundamentally physical. It's real. You know, did you see Kim.com's tweet the other day? I thought it was very clever and very truthful. He said,
I saw the print the money. One where,
yeah. Sorry. Yeah. He said they can print money, but they can't print energy. And that's the same thing. You can print all the money you want, but if you don't build the railroads, then you don't have any kind of basis for an economy. So that's my view. I think that it's going to continue. I think it's going to develop, because the whole point of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization efforts is to say the future looks like the expansion of the Belt and Road Initiative everywhere. And that's also the mission of the Shou Institute, is to say this needs to be expanded into the world land bridge. That's our goal.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I saw that. It's true what he said. But the last tweet that I saw from Kim was the video he posted about a simulation of nuclear war between NATO and Russia. But just what you said about the Belt and Road, I've been in Croatia the last number of months, and the Chinese recently built a bridge connecting parts of Croatia over the water, which prior to this bridge, you'd have to drive through Bosnia to continue going down the Croatian coast. And I don't think it was directly linked with Belt and Road, but maybe one of the offices was involved, perhaps in some of the planning and whatnot. But again, that's interesting how far its reaches. We got to jump to our news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. All of Florida is in a state of emergency as Hurricane Ian is expected to strengthen once it enters the Gulf of Mexico. There was a shooting rampage at a school in Russia in the city of Izhevsk, about 600 miles east of Moscow. 13 people were killed, 7 of them children. The World Health Organization is indicating the COVID pandemic could be nearing a close. On Wednesday, the agency's director general said the end is in sight, but added we're not there yet.
For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio,
simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs, presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, keeping you in the loop on TNT Radio.
If you want to maybe tell us about the Shiller conference that's coming up in, I think, like in a little over 2 weeks, in October in New York, there's a number of interesting speakers there, and it'll also be available, I think, for live stream. So, maybe tell us more about that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're doing this awesome conference on October 15th. It's the first conference that we have done in person since, for a long time. So thank goodness we're getting back to this. And it is going to be live streamed. October 15 is a Saturday. It'll be from 10 in the morning to 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be in Manhattan. If you'd like to come in person, I really invite you to come. The title of the conference is Build the New Paradigm, Defeat Green Fascism. And we're going to have two panels, tremendous speakers, including, I just learned today, we're going to have a video from Dr. Will Happer, who was actually on Trump's National Security Council. He is a Princeton professor emeritus, very significant physicist, and he has actually been putting out the most valuable material, debunking CO2 as a source of man-made CO2 as a cause of catastrophic global warming, indeed of warming period. The idea that there's going to be any significant warming from increases in man-made CO2, he has shown that that is not truthful. And so there's something that's going to be powerful. But we're going to focus on youth. The core idea is to spark an international youth movement, because what we're finding at the Schiller Institute, at the International LaRouche movement led by Helga Zepp LaRouche, is that we have an increasing number of students who are coming in to the actions of our movement, that are coming in to learn and study the ideas of Lyndon LaRouche, the economic theory, his devotion to classical culture, his vision for the future. And they're saying, you know, his method of forecasting. And these people, we're growing up a capability to go to people who are very young, who weren't brainwashed against Lyndon LaRouche, or at least, you know, weren't told all types of horrible lies. They live in a situation nowadays where everyone who does anything good is lied about terribly. And people like Jackson Hinkle will be speaking. Haas from Infrared will be speaking. I like both of these guys very much. I've talked quite a bit to Haas. And they're looking at these ideas of LaRouche, the proposals like the World Land Bridge, and they're saying, you know, this is something that is important for the world to understand, and we should exonerate LaRouche so that these ideas can be discussed everywhere, and especially in the United States. And what we're going to be doing at the conference is putting together, you know, a thorough presentation of this new paradigm of mutual progress and development, which is under such vicious attack by the people trying to create thermonuclear war in Ukraine and in DC and in London. And we're going to put this whole thing together along with a panel primarily on defeating green fascism. We'll have a wonderful speaker from South Africa, who is Princy Mthombeni. She's the leader of Africa for Nuclear, a nuclear advocacy group in South Africa. And we're going to just present to everyone who gets there and everyone who watches, what does it take to change the situation? We need a new international economic architecture. We need a new system. And LaRouche wrote about that his whole life. And so we have some blueprints, and we're calling on people to work with us to make them happen.
I'm going to try to catch that live stream that Saturday, just prepare some good coffee and snacks. And of course, I'm sure it'll be available as replay afterward. But I'm also, I'm thankful that we can have events in person again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. I went earlier this year in Mexico to a libertarian sort of podcast conference on the beach, and you can't really compare watching something online and just meeting people, connecting, and it's people that I've met and then chatted with. I continue to chat with after the fact, and so I think that's really important. And one of the pandemic policies was to keep us from coming together. And I did want to ask you about, because you mentioned Jackson Hinkle, and I'm new mm-hmm. to his work. He's relatively new on the scene, but getting a lot of mm-hmm. traction. This whole, you've talked about young people and youth movement, this whole MAGA communism. I've said this before. Yes. I haven't had much time to look into it, but you know, how do you understand what is this MAGA communism?
Well, what I see is that, I mean, these two guys, Haas and Hinkle, along with Samira Khan, who people may know from Twitter, she's going to be speaking. She's a journalist. They have been really instrumental in launching that meme, you know, that idea, that notion. And what does it really mean? I really like someone who said it on Twitter. I know a bunch of the people who think of themselves this way. Someone said it's a mission. It is a mission. You know, what you have is a large faction, a growing faction of really, really young people in their early 20s who have recognized that the American left, the Western left, has been a creature of a Malthusian oligarchy for decades. They ran into that problem themselves. They ran into the incredible pessimism. They ran into the climate catastrophism. They ran into, you know, the absurd degradations of culture of all types that you see. You can go on that for a long time, but everyone knows what I'm talking about. And they realized that they had to reject that. And then because they got a little bit cleansed by that process of fighting back, then they were open to learning about LaRouche. And guess what? Lyndon saw that coming in the late 1960s. you know, and he built his international movement out of the youth movement around the opposition to the Vietnam War by calling on those students to say, we are going to fight for the international development of mankind, for the economic development of the third world. That is the most important thing that we can do strategically and for humanity. And so that's how he built his movement. And people are coming to learn about him and what he did over his 50 years. And they're getting very excited because there is a blueprint. There's a concept of how to go somewhere from here. But I think that the MAGA communism approach in and of itself is very explicit. They are saying, we are going to the Trump constituency. It's not about Trump. I mean, if you really listen to what Henkel and what Haas have to say, what Jackson and Haas have to say, it is not about Trump. And certainly Samir are the same. It is not about Trump. It is about the Trump constituency. It's about going to the people who chose to vote for Trump when he said a good relationship with Russia is a good thing. A good relationship with China is a good thing. He said that NAFTA killed us. He said that, you know, we've got to, in fact, in October of 2016, Trump gave a speech calling for a return to Glass-Steagall. He did that. People were responding to the guy who said we need to end the endless wars. Now, he didn't follow through. And I think that you just have to acknowledge, like, Trump went along with Mike Pompeo. He went along with Steve Bannon, and he just wrote himself out of history in that moment. Maybe he could revive himself. I don't know. We'll find out. But he definitely has not actually addressed the things that he did wrong. And in the meanwhile, he was under the most outrageous attack, an attempted coup against him, which was successful. And the whole thing was a disaster. So the problem is that the people who voted for him when his things that he was campaigning for at that time, they need champions. They need people who will go and who will actually try to lead them and educate them and work with them and collaborate with them around reindustrializing the United States and getting the United States to join the Belt and Road Initiative, which is one of the key mega communism planks, and to build the world land bridge, which among these people, especially Haas, is very explicit that that is one of his goals politically. So that's my extended response. I think there's a great opportunity here where people are saying we can't go along with the old way of doing things. We need to face up to a disaster and do something new.
Yeah, you mentioned Will Happer. He just happened to have been he's been a recent guest here on TNT, not with me, but with other presenters, a number of them. So he's become friendly as well with TNT. So it's great that he's going to be speaking there as well. And, you know, just to talk a bit more about the green fascism, that's, you know, the central title of the conference. And, you know, I've been traveling these days, and it's just kind of shocking when you go away and then you come back and you really do see differences. And I was on the plane, and the CEO of the airline, you know, the ad comes up while you're in your seat, and he's talking about our airline is inclusive LGBT, ESG, right? The environment, social governance score, that's part of the green fascism's, that's their tool. Right, the ESG sort of score, and then there's another commercial talking about smart cars, and you just plug this thing in, and it shows the visuals where the car is driving, and there's like Wi-Fi signals, and it says IoT, Internet of Things, and this is sort of like this doomsday death cult that they want to put us into, total control grid, total, you know, lowering energy consumption, quality of life, impoverishing and killing as many people as possible. A lot of the people who don't look into this stuff, all the people around us who are too busy to work, they just buy this hook, line, and sinker. And but if you really, as Executive Intelligence Review has done, if you really parse what's going on, I mean, this is, you can't be any more blunter, like doomsday death cult, no?
I agree completely. And, you know, one of the things that's actually shifting things in the right direction here is this agreement to the idea of what is the nature of colonialism? Because, you know, some of the political problem that we've had on the left, you have people who were dominated by the Democratic Party, dominated by the FBI and so forth, and dominated by the international climate mafia. And so they didn't actually in the United States. And so they refused to listen to the truth about the nature of the Green New Deal and associated policies, the actually killer nature of these policies. And on the right, you have people who were willing to say, this is a fraud. This is a fraud. They're trying to destroy us. You know, but those people had tended to believe tended to be sort of parochial and focused on the United States. And so they weren't looking, they're not ready to say what we're saying, which is that you need to recognize now 1.7 billion people are marching towards famine. That's what we're looking at. The conditions, the effect of decades and decades of Malthusian policies on Africa is such that, you know, in the conditions of global economic crisis, you have like 30% inflation in many different countries in Africa. You have a disastrous condition of life. And what's happening? The State Department is financing environmentalist groups. And of course, Soros and other associated figures are financing environmentalist groups to prevent African countries from developing their fossil fuels. And the group people that I see that are really getting animated about that and realizing how evil this is, you're talking about mass genocide in the entire world. We're not just talking about like life getting progressively worse in the United States, which it is. It's getting disastrous here. But we're not just talking about that. We're talking about humanity. We're talking about the imminent danger of a new dark age. And people who get that and are willing to say, if we do not fight for the economic development of Africa, then there's no possibility of us defeating this green fascist empire. That's I think, the most interesting political development that's going on in the United States today and in Europe, is that you have people who are willing to address that fact.
It's just, I would agree. And it's mind-boggling how slick the advertisement is everywhere you go, on the news, in the schools, for, you know, climate change, blah, blah, blah. I'll do your part. Now, when you buy plane tickets, they've got the, you can pay for your, what do you call that in the Holy Roman Empire terms, your indulgence.
Yeah, the indulgence,
fee. It's crazy, but I'm sure at some point they'll make it mandatory. So they'll just make everything much more expensive and so on and so forth. We got to jump to our last break. The website is schillerinstitute.com. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Stephen Friend. Remember his name, and you might want to mention him the next time somebody tells you that FBI is not a completely corrupt organization. Stephen Friend is an FBI special agent, or was until Monday when he was suspended. Why was he suspended? For blowing the whistle on FBI being politically weaponized against Joe Biden's political enemies. Stephen Friend was a SWAT team member who was pulled off of critical investigations of child pornography, human trafficking, child sex trafficking, and put on January 6th cases that were misdemeanors at best. But he was ordered to SWAT those people. He complained through his chain of command about the violations of FBI rules and the United States Constitution, and was rewarded with suspension. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Chris Domine is a husband, father, an athlete, even an Ironman. But 10 years ago, Chris's kidneys were failing.
The doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant, you are going to die.
Chris received a second chance, made possible by an organ donor.
Your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
The Australian government has partnered with Twitter, Google, Apple, Meta Facebook, TikTok, Yahoo, eBay, Linktree, Snap Inc., Change.org, GoFundMe, Product Review, and Redbubble to tell Australians what they can and can't say. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
We're talking to Daniel Burke, Schiller Institute representative. The website is schillerinstitute.com. And October 15th is the conference, Build the New Paradigm, Defeat Green Fascism. $20 to attend in person, and you can watch for free online. But again, I would highly recommend, if you're in the area or not too far, you know, to hop, skip on a plane and get there. It's worth it, because you'll make connections that will be very, you know, important and meaningful, and you know, maybe even help you out in some of the work that you do as well. And I did want to ask you, Daniel, that I've had Fox Green on. I just randomly stumbled upon, I randomly stumbled upon his Twitter feed, and he's got a lot of interesting things to say. I chatted with Jason last week, and now with yourself, and you know whether we may or may not agree with all of the analysis or solutions of LaRouche, but I think by far a lot of the things he says is common sense. But I find all of the people that work at the Schiller Institute are extremely well, very eloquent, well-spoken, and knowledgeable. I mean, that sort of sets it apart. Is it? I would guess it's mostly because y'all are very well-read. What is it with the Schiller Institute and LaRouche people that are just so bang on point?
Well, now you get into the point of the conference, because I had a conversation with one of the speakers in which he expressed his deep concern about how we're possibly going to change things. Because, of course, part of the analysis is that the leading figures in the West are Malthusian lunatics who are willing to risk thermonuclear war to save their dying system. Now, so that's pretty scary. And I said in response, I know of one reasonable idea about how to change things. And that is, we need about 500 to 1,000 young people in the United States who really fundamentally understand science, economics, and culture. And if we have that, then we could win. If we reverse this dark age through the very difficult, very fun, very creative process of building a renaissance, which starts very small, then I think we can win. And indeed, that's how all great periods of development in human history have occurred. So that is why we are, that is why you can notice a certain quality in our membership. I don't know what exactly that is, but I think the core fundamental thing is that we're working together to get more and more people involved in a mission to really to act out of agape, out of a love of mankind, to give meaning to our lives, to change these horrific conditions in the world today into the beginning of an age of reason. And therefore, everything we do is about educating. It's about intervening. It's about having faith in your own, identity as a human individual. That means you can play a fundamentally crucial role in human history, and that's how you will live on after you're dead. That's what Lynn impressed upon me, in the time that I knew him, and now every time I read his papers.
And maybe to turn towards. Well, we haven't gotten into it yet, but as you talk about World War III and escalation, we do seem to be seeing that. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić recently put out an alarming statement saying that, like, in 1 or 2 months, things could escalate. Some sort of cryptic statement saying that, in 1 or 2 months, we could end up in, something bigger than World War II. And then, of course, Putin. His mobilization of 300,000 troops, and then basically again repeating his line in the sand that they will defend Russian territorial integrity, with whatever the case may be, including nukes, and just your sort of thought, where it seems like since the last time we spoke, there's this slow burn, this slow progressive burn upwards towards escalation. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, it was perhaps 2 weeks ago that the head of the Ukrainian Armed Services and you probably talked about this already with Jason, but I just want to raise it again. I mean, he came out with a letter, public letter, saying what we really need if we want to cause the Russians to to really, like, you know, to feel it, to stop having such exuberance in the way they approach things, that what we need is a preemptive nuclear strike. And everything has been situated, as by RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute, which is the leading think tank of the British monarchy and the British establishment, or as by the Atlantic Council, the NATO think tank, which recently put out a statement calling for the U.S. to prepare for a nuclear strike on Russia in response to a nuclear strike that they claim is going to come, even though they say, well, one of the cons of this policy is that you might have general nuclear war. It's a con, but we still should consider it. So you have a bunch of lunatics who are pressing us in this direction, who really believe that they could use nuclear weapons, throw them around, and get their way, because they don't give a damn if it means that large numbers of people are eliminated and if the world becomes less and less habitable, because they're already Malthusians who believe we should reduce the world's population. So they really are that crazy. That process has been continuing. Scott Ritter says we are 1 second to midnight. I know you've talked to him recently. And therefore, you know, I mean, things are absolutely terrifying. And I hope that people are impelled by that to do something about it, to demand that your representatives change things, that people in your government, wherever it may be, change things. I mean, one thing we're doing with Diane Sayre, who's a wonderful U.S. Senate candidate for in New York for the LaRouche Party. She's my wonderful friend for 10 years. She is having all of her supporters call into Chuck Schumer's office and ask him, why is he supporting a nuclear war policy? And why did he put his political opponent, Diane, on a Ukrainian death list? So these are the kind of things we got to do. Intervene and don't give up.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I don't know if you've seen the speech by Lavrov at the UN. I think it was very powerful. I read it, and just the way that the multipolar world or global south or whatever you want to call it, the way that they're speaking now, I think that's another sign, because the way they speak is someone who sounds like they're sure of themselves and who has, you know, power. And, you know, he goes on to talk about the future of the world order. It's being decided. And it's, the question is whether it'll be an order with one hegemon forcing everyone to live by its proverbial rules, and so on. And talks about the Golden Billion and the U.S. Using far-fetched pretexts, aggressive wars unleashed against Yugoslavia, Iraq, and Libya, and so forth. And just this sort of rhetoric, I think they're ratcheting it up as well in the East, you know, Russia, China, and others. We got about 2 minutes left. Any final thoughts?
Well, I just want to thank you for the interview, for all the support to the conference, and, you know, and for the show that you do. I think that I want to urge everyone to take this opportunity to get up and do something. Get out of the tendency to just sort of watch the whole thing fall apart. It's very terrifying. It's really worrisome when you think about how things might develop. But instead, think, okay, what is the future that we want, and how can we advance that policy? Lyndon LaRouche said one thing we quoted at the beginning of our last conference. He said, the crisis is our opportunity to create a new system. But if the people don't know about the policies that will make that happen, they will go insane. So get out and tell people what will work. And that's how we can change things.
Are you sad that you didn't make personally the Ukrainian blacklist, or did you?
No, I didn't, and I would say I'm not sad, but I'm sure there'll be more opportunities in the future.
Well,
if we really do our job right, mm-hmm. we might end up in prison. So,
well, I'm gonna keep waiting for your updates on the latest regarding the Xi Jinping coup. And all of that stuff. So Again, the website is schillerinstitute.com. Conference is October 15th. Go there if you can in person or watch live online. Thank you, as always, Daniel Burke. Keep up with the good work. And that's it for me today. But keep on, you know, listening to TNT. And we'll see you next time.